This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Can I start with this? Mr. Garrett yesterday was very kind. On a busy, busy day, he appeared by Zoom in front of the Minnesota Broadcasters Association. Initially, he was going to travel there, but scheduling changed. When you were traveling there, I was going to surprise you and show up and introduce you. But business happens, so yes. Totally understand it. A couple friends of mine, knowing that we're good friends, sent me the picture. I showed it to Dave Harrigan, and it looked like a hostage situation. And there was only one thing in the room. Dave Harrigan, what was the one thing in the room with Major Garrett when he was in period? I don't know, maybe while the Minnesota Broadcasters Association is holding him hostage. What was the only one thing in the room with Major? Exactly. You're in there. You can't even make it up. You're in there with only one thing, a copy machine. Can't make it up. So good.
That was my inside joke, you know, and yes. I figured eventually it would get to you, which means it would land exactly as intended.
It did. It did. Thanks for doing that.
And you're right. It was a busy day. It was not an easy matter to squeeze that in, but I made a commitment, and it was important to try to live up to it to the best of our technological abilities.
Yeah, and you did. And I talked to multiple people who said you were fantastic. Okay, last night, the most important question. Did last night, in any subtle or significant way, change the direction of the upcoming election?
Probably not, in the sense that I don't think it was an earthquake, meaning a tremor that would dislodge something that is pretty much settling in. And this election is pretty much settling in. That doesn't mean it wasn't important, and it doesn't mean it didn't reveal some things. And if I could, just for a moment, I want to observe the perils of preemptive hysteria.
Okay.
Because there were several self-appointed journalistic critics who assailed my network before the debate for what they assumed wouldn't happen. The debate proved that we are fully capable of asking a wide range of penetrating and well-grounded questions. If there is something that is egregiously factually inaccurate, correcting it in real time, and allowing a large team of journalists on a live blog to correct things with footnotes and explanations as the debate continued. I just want to say on behalf of my network, we did everything that we said we would do, and the preemptive hysteria about us abandoning journalistic ethics or responsibility, or even, as some said, morality, let me just say gently, diplomatically, were misplaced.
Okay, can I react to that? And you know,
sure,
there is no one in this business I have greater respect for than you. So when I saw, from I thought credible reports in the couple days ahead, saying that CBS was going to follow the path of CNN, when Jake Tapper and Dana Bash left it up to President Biden and Donald Trump to fact-check each other. ABC tried a different approach, and we talked both times about that. I felt like I had consumed that information from sites I thought were credible. So to me, as a viewer, and also as a journalist, and someone who's moderated multiple debates, but, you know, gubernatorial debates, congressional debates, but not that level, not even close to that level, that when I saw Nora offer up her comments at the end of the climate change debate, and Margaret Brennan offer up the comments at the end of the immigration debate, I was surprised about that part. Take me through at least some of the reports suggesting it would be more of the CNN approach.
So a lot of this is what lands journalistically now as instant hyper-interpretation.
Okay.
And perhaps we could have emphasized things differently, but I'm not sure it would have mattered. People were hell-bent on assuming when we said we would largely leave it to the candidates to engage with each other, that we were abandoning any sense of discipline or rectitude when it came to correcting something that was obviously and grotesquely factually incorrect. We were not ceding that territory, but what we were trying to do is convey in advance that the dynamic of the debate would be to maximize the engagement of the candidates, to let the candidates respond to each other directly, fact-check each other as they see fit, argue the points as they want them to be argued, and let that be the most memorable component of the debate, the most memorable thematic component of the debate. And largely, I believe, we succeeded, because many times in the debate, what was the response from Nora or Margaret, my two colleagues? Governor Walz, would you care to respond to that? Senator Vance, would you care to respond to that? To get them to deal with each other on stage as political opponents in their own words and under their own time constraints. Largely, that succeeded. But when J.D. Vance again tried to go to the well, though he did so much more meekly than he has the last couple of weeks, about Haitians and Springfield, suggesting they're all here illegally, which is a blatant falsehood. Margaret Brennan said correctly, they have temporary protected status. They are here legally. And then he said, I thought there was going to be no fact-checking, which I considered one of the immortal moments of the debate itself. And it is quite obvious when Nora said the scientific consensus is overwhelmingly clear that man-made CO2, carbon dioxide, is a contributing factor to more extreme and unpredictable weather patterns. That's also a fact. And I don't think anyone on the stage even dared to dispute that. Those were the two moments in which they interjected basic core reality to a conversation. The rest of it was left to the candidates themselves, which is what we said would be the goal of the debate.
Let's pause right here with Major. Let's talk about his view of the civility. And did an individual watching on his plane leaving Milwaukee, Wisconsin, after another series of bizarre comments, what did Donald Trump think of that civility? Bonus Major. Major Garrett back with us in moments on CCO.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Major Garrett with us. We're going to get to the Middle East with Major at the end of this conversation. Also, Aaron David Miller, frequent guest of the show, is going to join us on the same topic at 2:35. It was a non-Trumpian debate where there certainly was passion. There were large gaps in policy positions, but it was respectful. It was deferential. Did that surprise you? And how do you think the former president felt about the way his vice president, J.D. Vance, played it in the respect he showed to Tim Walz throughout the debate and also Walz to Vance?
I'm going to tell you something that is not based on reporting. I don't have any inside information on how the former president digested the debate. But I know his sense of things, having covered him for a very long time. And I know he has a very raw, borderline cynical interpretation of political motives. Not altogether that much more cynical than most people in politics, but slightly more so. And my hunch is, and remember, I'm saying this is my hunch, is that the former president looked at that debate performance and says, JD's afraid we're going to lose. And he's plotting his future. His future is to be the rationalist Trump of the future for the Republican Party.
Yep.
To be the person who can more cogently and politely and acceptably articulate most parts of the America First agenda, but try to find new methodologies to talk about things that are massive structural political problems for Trumpist Republicanism, which is gun violence, abortion, health care, and the like. J.D. Vance on the stage last night revealed the largest political secret in all of American history, at least in modern American history, that Donald Trump saved Obamacare. What? What are you talking about?
Right. Yeah.
And that's his
concept of a plan, Major. Concept.
To try to get this conversation to another place. When he says we Republicans, as if he's not a Republican himself, have to earn the public's trust on abortion, while also saying, hey, the states are going to do what the states are going to do. Well, that's the difficulty, but that's at least his attempt, his acknowledgement of a problem, something that Trump will do on occasion, but almost never on the debate stage. On the debate stage, he says, everyone wanted to go back to the states, every expert on planet Earth.
Right.
Vance knows that's not true, and he knows that's not a credible long-term political approach. So I think former President Trump looked at J.D. Vance and said, wow, this guy is not doing what I thought he was going to do, what this campaign most needs him to do, because their campaign is 100% a base mobilization campaign. Everything Trump says and does, the hysteria of it, is to mobilize and keep constantly at battle stations the base. J.D. Vance did very, very little of that last night.
Let's talk about the governor of this state.
He was plotting the future, his future.
Yep. Tim Walz, I think to a lot of us, looked nervous early on.
Yep.
Unsettled. Looked like an individual who even his last year and a half here in Minnesota, Major, has been extraordinarily selective outside of his normal press briefings in interviews. Used to come on this show all the time. Avoids it. Likes to do the press briefings, some more favorable interviews, and avoids them. We know outside of the Dana Bash interview, I think he did one other interview when he was with his dog, Scout. So I think the fact that Vance has availed himself to a number of interviews allowed him to come off as more polished. He, in particular, mightily struggled when the story came up about an interview from me about when he told me falsely that he was in Hong Kong during the Tiananmen Square uprising. I thought he improved later, but I would also add about his improvement, and you just alluded to a few of the answers. The ACA, abortion, and the election of 2020, those are wheelhouse topics for Democrats, and in particular, Tim Walz. So what was your assessment of the governor last night?
So he did get off to a very wobbly start. The first half hour were dominated by J.D. Vance because on international policy, the whole Trumpist line is the world wasn't on fire then, it's on fire now, therefore they're to blame, we were great. There is a kind of baseline logic to that, and many Trump supporters I've talked to around the country consider that really important. It was quieter and safer back then. I felt better back then than I do now. Okay, fine. Also, he mentioned two statistics that are important for Donald Trump about the economy. Real wage growth was up. That's true. And inflation was low. He didn't say we had the greatest economy ever because he knows that's not true, but he was on two statistics that actually are provably valid. And he hammered those. That was basically the first half hour. And the contrast, oh, and all these plans that Kamala Harris has, why isn't she doing them now? There's an explanation for that. But for most voters, that has a kind of core believability to it. First half hour, Vance excelled. And the governor was really, really trying to find his footing. He found his footing when he sounded more like he was running for a third term of the governorship of Minnesota.
Yeah. Right.
Talking about the Minnesota record, in which he is conversant and confident. And on abortion, when he said, why should this be a matter of this matter of fundamental human rights that is determined by geography, that is essentially wrapping that very complex issue into a nutshell, which is what you have to do. And J.D. Vance was taking on water there. J.D. Vance was taking on water on gun violence, talking about more secure doors.
Mm-hmm.
And the governor didn't mention this, but our doctor, senior medical correspondent John LaPook, texted me a story that he'd done a couple of months ago. Basically, in the United States and our beloved neighbors to the north, Canada, we have about the same statistical by percentage mental health illness rate. We have 8 times more gun violence in America than they do in Canada. What J.D. Vance tried to suggest is a lot of this is mental illness. And the mm-hmm. governor jumped on, hey, don't stigmatize those with diagnosed mental illness, but he didn't say the other part. Canada has exactly the same percentage problem that we do, and 8 times less gun violence. What do you think might be a causal factor of that difference? Well, the governor said it. Maybe it's just the guns.
Yeah.
So on those issues,
yeah.
the governor was much more adept, much more balanced. And then, look, he didn't know what J.D. Vance was going to say. He had a notion about what he was going to say about the 2020 election. But J.D. Vance gave, and the right loves to use this terminology, so I'll use their terminology. He gave the most exquisite beta male answer you could possibly articulate.
Yeah.
What I mean by that, ladies and gentlemen, if you don't traffic in our right-wing conversation, is a weakling. Yeah. A weakling, spineless man.
Right, yes.
He said, I look to the future. What do you mean? The whole debate's been about Trump's past and the supposed great record.
And so is Trump question, all about the past.
you can't answer that question. And the reason you can't answer that question is because the running mate at the top of your ticket will not allow you to answer that question truthfully.
No.
And that was a stark moment.
Yeah, it was an answer for one, and everybody knows it. Hours ago, Joe Biden, in brief remarks to the press, says he and the United States government do not support Israel bombing the Iranian nuclear sites. Did he say that before a conversation with Bibi Netanyahu, or did he say that after a conversation with Bibi Netanyahu? What do you think?
Our reporting is that there are lots of back channel and direct conversations, probably from the Secretary of State, national to prime minister level. But look, that is advice. 10 million Israelis had to go to bomb shelters yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
This was a very big moment for the entire country. And as I said on our special coverage last night, this is, and this last week has been, a clarifying moment for what Israel is up against. It is no longer murky about, well, militias backed by Iran, and what does that mean, and what are the direct connections, and how all those direct connections have been laid bare the last 2 or 3 weeks through who died in the pagers that exploded via Israel's intervention, and now a direct aerial assault with missiles on the state of Israel by Iran. It's now clear to the world what is going on and what Israel is up against, and it makes much more unequivocal America's support for Israel in this context. But it knows that trying to disable Iranian nuclear facilities is extremely difficult military work. That's why most of it has been done by cyber or, to be put it bluntly, assassinating those at the top of the intellectual pyramid doing that work, which has been the Israeli method to date. A military intervention, because they're so far buried underground, extremely difficult, meaning you can risk a lot of things and not gain very much in the aftermath. But we're at a very much of a tipping point in that region. And part of the tipping point is, again, those who want to destroy Israel keep learning a bitter military lesson, first learned in 1967. It's much harder than you think, and they're much better at it than you are.
Excellent as always, sir. Appreciate the bonus appearance. We'll talk on Friday.
Excellent. Thanks.
Major, with us, 132 on CCO.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.